देवो महेश्वरः गुरुस्साक्षात् परब्रह्मा तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति 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 If we had somehow followed the philosophical basis of Hatha Yoga, it would not be difficult to see how what we call the physical was originally pure spirit, and perhaps is the pure spirit even now. I don't know if you will tolerate a biblical parallel. It says God created Adam. God created everything out of Himself. Because if you accept that God alone was in the beginning, whatever was created out of Him, of His own substance. And there was this Adam, the firstborn son, and perhaps the only begotten son. And God takes rests and Adam goes to sleep. That's fair enough, isn't it? And then we have come one step away. That is, Adam as part of God has become an individual. That's what the Vedantins call Atma. Atma, Adam are both same. And then he falls asleep, which means he falls into a state of ignorance. And then comes his companion, out of himself, called Eve. We won't go into that now. And now the man, who is the child of God, suddenly becomes the husband of this girl. Is that right? The identity is lost and an identification is formed. Self-knowledge is lost, and out of the loss of self-knowledge immediately gives rise to an identification. So it's a double-edged sword which cuts us both ways. It's not only loss of self-knowledge, this loss of self-knowledge immediately gives rise to identification. If I don't know who I am, I must immediately call myself an Indian, a Hindu and all that sort of thing. And then this man, who was originally God and who was later the son of God and the husband of Eve, becomes the father of the sons. And then when he is thrown out of the Garden of Eden, if you believe all that story, he becomes a farmer, he owns a ranch. He becomes a farmer, he becomes the father of these children, he is now God-forsaken, etc., etc., the whole lot. And from there, this identification moves further and further and further away from the truth. But if this God is omnipresent, No one can run away from God. Yes, is that right? If the truth, if this cosmic consciousness, a cosmic being is omnipresent, is infinite, one can never get away from the infinite. One can never completely go away from the infinite or the cosmic being or cosmic consciousness. That is probably what Christian theology tried to prove by saying that Adam was not completely banished from the Garden of Eden, didn't get completely lost. He is there in all, and here he is awakened. The same Adam in Jesus is supposed to have been awakened to the truth. And when is that possible? When you are able to throw the flesh away as though it didn't matter. Crucifixion of the flesh. If you are prepared to throw this, forget this flesh, forget this materiality, then it is possible to recapture the true spirit. So somehow we have come to identify ourselves with the flesh, and the process of yoga is the purification of the whole thing and getting back to the source. In the same way, a little movement of energy in the cosmic consciousness creates a collision and fusion within that cosmic consciousness, within that cosmic being, and the energy colliding and fusing the basic element, if such could be accepted, the hydrogen atom, brings about greater and greater combinations, grosser and grosser combinations, till eventually you find this body and this world. And as this proceeds, the identity is forgotten, that is, self-knowledge is forgotten, and this forgetfulness of self-knowledge immediately creates identification. I think this is important to remember, right? When I lose my identity, I want to identify myself with something or other. And this is true, I think, in psychology, yes? Yeah? When one doesn't know, when I suddenly wake up in a strange place and I don't know what, I immediately want to create some kind of relationship. I want to identify myself with something or other so that I feel secure, foolishly. And thus matter is formed, and thus we seem to exist, and we cling to some notion or other in an effort to identify ourselves, right down to the present. You can see that in the case of every one of us. We started as a baby, completely free, but unfortunately your euphemism calls it helpless. The baby is totally free, so that she could take the baby and then the baby would be quite happy. She could handle the baby, quite happy. You can carry the baby away, it's quite happy. Not worried at all. I'm talking about the little infant, not a 6 months old or 1 year old. Little infant. Could be taken away by anybody. Doesn't bother. And then that purity is somehow lost. Why somehow lost? You tell them, no? You tell that little infant, I am your mummy, and I am your daddy, he is your daddy. May or may not be, it doesn't matter, but he is your daddy. And so the baby is forced into a relationship, is that right? The little one is forced into a relationship and pulled away from its center. Then for some time this child identifies itself as the child of Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so. And as it grows up, suddenly that relationship is lost. The identity is not lost. Is that right? I don't know if I can make that clearer. I am still I. I have not lost my identity. But then the identification seems to be shifting. The parents are not so important. Now my schoolmates are so important. My father and mother may still be there. I am still what I was, what I am. I continue to be what I am. But I am in my own heart, in my own mind, in my own consciousness, the notion that I am the son of so-and-so is gone, or at least weakened greatly, but I am the friend of so-and-so gains strength. Is that clear? Right? And then I go on, I develop a sort of, you know, I go steady. And I develop a more intimate relationship with one particular person to whom I become the boyfriend or the husband. So that the parental relationship is nearly completely submerged. They almost look strangers now. The friends are no longer friends but acquaintances. I knew them some time ago. Yeah, we were classmates, weren't we? Because there is a more realistic and more intimate identification with this one person. And if you see this, it goes on changing and changing and changing, this identification. So that it is possible, it is easy to understand the ease with which notions arise and subside in consciousness. That's all I want to bring home to you now. It's easy to see. When you begin to ask, how was it possible for this omnipresent, omnipotent and cosmic being to forget itself and to become this flesh? That is it. It's quite so simple as that. How was it possible for that child who was clinging to the father and mother? How was it possible for that child to throw them completely out of its consciousness and come to identify itself with someone else, stranger, a total stranger, whom he had not met before at all? In the same way, this consciousness is able progressively to forget its identity and to become involved in identification with the mind, with the limitation. Mind means limitation. Mind means limitation, a conditioned notion. And this particular body, physical body, with its life force, with its own inherent notions, etc., etc. And yoga recognizes the entire process without merely saying, oh, all that is rubbish. People have tried that trick also. When you see that this whole thing is a mere illusion, illusion in the sense that the truth is still there. The entire universe is nothing but consciousness and energy, chit shakti, even now. That was one point of view. Why labor about this physical body and so on? Forget it. And go right back to the source. Maybe a bit difficult for most of us. Since this whole process of identification seems to have taken place, it's better to transform or transmute every aspect of this identification and roll the whole thing back to its source. That is what's called yoga. And so since the identification has descended right down to the level of the physical being, pay some attention to that without getting completely lost in it, which I hope you will not forget. without getting completely lost in it, so that the even the practices of Hatha Yoga are not meant to rectify your liver and, you know, liver asana and spleen asana. Have you heard that? No. Someone has written a book calling it all this. But why not? There's no harm. You know, there is an asana called Padahastasana. Padahastasana, pada means foot, hasta means hand. Padahastasana is where you hold your foot by your hand. So that is allowed. Why not liver asana? Why not spleen asana? Why not thyroid asana? It doesn't matter what these are called, as long as I realize that though in these practices the physical body seems to be involved, it is merely to purify the physical body and go right back to the source. Hence, the author of Hatha Yoga Pradipika makes it very clear right in the beginning. He says, I am teaching Hatha Yoga in order to prepare you for the practice of Raja Yoga or meditation. The truth which is hardly ever remembered in the wonderful modern world. Mm-hmm. It's a lovely verse. Nearly the first verse in the Hatha Yoga Pradipika. The second verse, the first verse is invocation, of course. Pranamya Shri Gurum Natham Svatma Ramena Yogina Kevalam Raja Yogaya Hatha Vidyopadishyate. After having saluted my Guru, the yogi Svatmarama is the author of Hatha Yoga Pradipika, expounds Hatha Yoga Vidya, Kevalam Raja Yoga, only for the purpose of the practice of Raja Yoga. So that it is not meant for as a sort of health gimmick or slimming exercise. These are incidental to the spiritual benefit that one derives from the Hatha Yoga practices. In the Bhagavad Gita also, Sri Krishna mentions this very specifically. Why does one practice yoga at all? Even meditation, not this. He doesn't mention Hatha Yoga. Why does one practice yoga at all, even the yoga of meditation? Atma Shuddhaye. One should meditate in order that one may purify oneself, cleanse the mirror. If the mirror is cleaned, then the truth is reflected without any further effort. No further effort is necessary, is needed. When the mirror is clean, the truth is reflected. When your heart is clean, the truth is reflected in it without any further effort. Hatha Yoga has a few components, and we have another lovely scripture here called Gheranda Samhita, where the purpose of the various practices is given. Shatkarmana Shodhanam Asanena Bhaved Dridham Mudraya Sthirata Achiva Pratyaharena Dhirata Pranayamal Laghavam Cha Dhyanat Pratyaksham Atmanah Samadhina Nirlittam Cha Muktareva Nasamshayah. These are the seven components of Hatha Yoga. purification is acquired by the regular performance of the Shat Kriyas. We'll come to that in a minute. Purification. Self-purification is gained by the purificatory practices. Asana or posture gives dridhata or stability. Posture gives stability. It is no more than that. Right? It's not slimming or fattening or suppleness. None of those things is mentioned here. And therefore, in Raja Yoga, again, Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, you have the description of the posture as sthira sukham asanam. The posture must be comfortable, in which you can sit for quite a considerable time, and it must be firm, sthiram. And the third Hatha Yoga practice is mudra, gives sthirata or steadiness. The fourth is pratyahara, gives dhirata or calmness, perseverance. Pranayama gives lightness, enlightenment. Yeah? You feel light, don't feel heavy. Not only physically, but psychologically, neurologically, and also spiritually. You are able to go through life without feeling life a burden. Dhyana or meditation gives pratyaksha or direct realization of the self. And samadhi brings about freedom. Nirlittam cha muktireva na samshayah. Nirlittam also means non-attachment. When, you have heard this before, I think. Non-attachment. The yogi who has experienced samadhi is not attached to anything. You know, he doesn't want to touch anything, he doesn't want to look at anything. Oh, he's unattached. I don't know if that is the meaning. Attachment implies duality. Attachment presupposes a division. So, the yogi's non-attachment, samadhi, that he experiences in samadhi, is a realization of cosmic oneness. When you and I are forever one in this cosmic being, in which there is no division, then there is neither an attraction nor an aversion. There is neither an attachment nor a hatred. There is neither what you call love nor what you call hate. In a manner of speaking, what they are talking, the non-attachment they are talking about, is also makes sense. It seems one great saint of India, Ramdas, once said that to love all is to love none in particular. What does it mean to love all? To love all is not to love one in particular. So that you are my favorite. I love you more than. Right? And therefore, in a manner of speaking, he doesn't get caught. He doesn't get trapped. So these are the seven yoga practices, and their benefits are given. In this lovely little text called Gherand Samhita, gives a very detailed description of all these practices that it mentions. I don't know if you are interested in all that. But for the sake of knowing, even if we are not really interested in these practices, I think it's good to become acquainted with them. Many of these are not universally practiced, and a reason why I omitted them, mentioning them in that book. But then later someone pointed out that even if they are not practiced, it's good to record, put them on record and leave them there. And so I included them in the next edition. The first are the purificatory exercises known as the Shat Kriyas. Both the texts on Hatha Yoga mention them. In the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, there is a beautiful verse, Yatheshtam dharanam vayor analasya pradipanam nadabhi vyaktirarogyam jayate nadishodhanat. Why should I practice all these purificatory kriyas that we shall describe presently? The benefits are given. Yatheshtam dharanam vayoho. If the physical body is rid of toxic substances, then it is possible to hold the breath for as long as you like. The impediments for the practice of pranayama, to the practice of pranayama, are removed. The impediments to the practice of pranayama are removed, which it's obvious that these are necessary only if you are going to devote yourself wholly and solely to the practice of pranayama. Otherwise, don't bother. Only in case you wish to take to the practice of pranayama very seriously, we'll come to that also in on another occasion, what a serious practice of pranayama means. It means practicing pranayama at least at the rate of 12 to 16 hours a day. You know, that alone, the yogi practices for at the rate of 12 to 16 hours a day. If you are going to devote that length of time and you are going to be so much devoted to the practice of pranayama, these purificatory kriyas are desirable. Analasya pradipanam. These six kriyas that we are going to describe also promote the vitality of the gastric fire, which means your digestion and your assimilation improves. Not because I want to eat a few more pancakes, but because I can do with half. Whatever little is eaten, whatever little is consumed, is fully assimilated. The yogi looks for better digestion and assimilation, not because he craves to eat more, but because he hopes to eat less. Analasya pradipanam nadabhivyaktihi. Hatha Yoga believes in what is known as listening to the inner sounds. We'll come to that also later. And if the body is completely purified, rid of all toxins, then the inner hearing becomes acute, clear, and therefore there is clairaudience. Clairaudience in simple words means clear ability to listen. Arogyam. And of course the physical body is also restored to perfect health. Now comes another important verse. Medashleshmadhikav purvam shat karmani samacharet anyastu nacharet tani दोषानां समभावतः।